Hello, Guitar Smarts listeners. This is an important announcement. Please don't skip ahead. We start this podcast with a special message. Way back in 2021, Guitar Smarts had the pleasure of interviewing the utterly fantastic Matt Long. Matt is a multiple award-winning British blues guitarist and lead singer of the British blues band Catfish and hard rock outfit The Revenant Ones. He joined us for episode number 20 and was a truly gracious guest who spoke about his career, his childhood, guitars, and meeting his hero, Joe Bonamassa. Well, Matt needs your help. Through 2023, Matt has been undergoing treatment for bowel cancer, and his recent prognosis has meant that to extend his life and retain a chance of survival, he needs to seek private treatment outside of the NHS. Matt's family have set up a GoFundMe page that is linked in the Guitar Smarts link tree in the description of this podcast, and we at the Guitar Smarts podcast would like to invite each and every listener to consider donating towards this fund that could well save the life of one of the brightest guitar talents of our generation. Now is the time, folks. Head on over to the link in the description to find the GoFundMe page. Donate what you can. Your donation could save a life. Thank you. Enjoy the podcast.
So, pick up Seymour and Duncan. Again, they're getting a lot of plugging.
Did you just say Seymour and Duncan again?
Oh, man, I've done it again. Come on. What is wrong with me today?
Unbelievable. You're making it sound like some kind of local grocery store. Seymour and Duncan, Fortnum and Mason's. Greetings, welcome back to the Guitar Smarts podcast. This week we are taking a look at some of the new products and news that came out of this year's NAMM exhibition in California. For those of you who maybe don't know, the NAMM show is an annual event in the United States that is organized by the National Association of Music Merchants. And when a company is releasing new guitars, pedals, amps, or anything else, they quite often do their biggest and best releases at the NAMM show. So listen on to hear what we found to be the most interesting things. Housekeeping, remember to like and subscribe to this podcast, that way you won't miss the next show. There is a link tree in the description of this show where you can follow links to our Buy Me a Coffee page, links to some of our other Spotify playlists, social media pages, especially the Guitar Geek Hangout page on Facebook, where you can interact with Kieran and myself, many other guitar nerds just like us. Anyway, have a great couple of weeks. Remember, if you have any comments or requests for the show, you can reach out to us through our social media pages. That's about enough from me. Let's get to it. Hey, Kieran, mate. How are you doing, buddy? Good week?
I'm super good. Yeah, really good week, man. Thank you. Fairly uneventful, but busy nonetheless. And yeah, lots of exciting guitar news coming out over the last couple of weeks, which has been keeping me on the internet and reading up on different bits of new gear coming out. So yeah, yeah. I am all good, my friend. And I got a gig tomorrow night, which I'm very much looking forward to. So yeah, how about you, man?
Good. I've been enjoying the same golden nuggets dropping from the sky, as you so eloquently put it on a previous podcast. Yeah, absolutely. Me enjoying you reading about the news coming out of NAMM and all the latest stuff in the industry. But I've been doing a lot of guitar tweaking this last couple of weeks. I'm still on the riding the crest of a wave, you know, from us talking about how to set up guitars previously. And you know, I've really kind of come down to doing the last few bits I intended to do. And I think you probably saw me post on the Guitar Geek Hangout about getting a set of nut files recently.
Oh my God,
this is crazy how different it makes the feel of the guitar. I mean, because my Les Paul, I've just put a new nut on it. It's ended up really nice, a Graphtec nut. Definitely made a fantastic difference in the sound, but obviously it needed tweaking just to get the height right. And I just couldn't believe how, after spending a bit of time just getting each one just right, just how different it made to, I expected it to make a profound difference to open chords and the way it felt down near the nut. But it really did make a difference across the whole neck, to the point where it on does. Both the Les Paul and on my Esquire, because I've adjusted both of those nuts, I ended up making a slight truss rod adjustment afterwards.
yeah, just to actually take a little bit more relief out.
Mm-hmm.
And then, so I took a slight bit of relief out and then raised the saddles ever so slightly, just because I kind of thought, actually, I think the curve I've got in the neck is coming back up at the bottom of the fretboard.
Yes.
And that's why it's buzzing out slightly. So it's given me the confidence to get things even straighter
and
flatter on the neck kind of thing, rather than having all that curving. But it's just profound, difference in how those things, I mean, one of the things you said right at the beginning of that process of how to set up your action, you know, because we went through setting up the truss rod, we went through setting up the bridge, and then we went through setting up the nut. I think after now going through all of those different processes, I'm just astounded at how big a difference in feel for playing the guitar that the balance between those three really produces, you know, like having the balance right between all those three things. I mean, it's like playing entirely different instruments, you know. And I would even go to say that there's a tone difference in the guitar when it's set up as good correctly. Do you know what I mean? It's almost like it resonates differently when it's set up better and when the strings have got the right space to vibrate. That's the thing I've learned this week more than anything.
I'm delighted, mate. I'm delighted. And you've grafted at it. I mean, you said you put a new nut on your Les Paul, but that Les Paul has had an overhaul of monumental dimensions over the last few months, right? So full rewire, new pickups, new pots, new tone caps, you know, proper full setup you've done on it, really dialed in the truss rod, really looked to get the bridge where it needs to be. And then I'm so delighted you've now got that final piece of the puzzle, because it is those three things that interplay to then get a guitar dialed in beautifully, right? Mm-hmm. And then everything else is like little marginal gains, really, on top of it for a playability standpoint.
Yeah.
Tone wise, you know, that's a different thing where you get into pickups and tone caps and all that kind of stuff. But in terms of pure playability, it is as simple as those three elements, which is, you know, the right relief in the neck, the right action at the bridge and radius, if it's that type of bridge with individual saddle pieces, and then the nut, getting the nut right. And it's only when you do all of those three that you can really dial it in. And it was so wonderful to see your results when you got your nut files and then had a go with them and to hear it now as well, that is the missing piece, as you said, of the puzzle. And once you've got that, that's it, mate. It's happy days. And now, as I said to you in the text during the week, I mean, that's it. You've ruined it for yourself now, only insofar as you've got this new skill set now and you've got the tools to do it. So every guitar you now look at will be judged according to that. And it ruins like expensive guitars for you in some way, because you can then see expensive guitars that have been set up well and where they haven't. And you just go, this is a really expensive guitar and it's not set up properly and it needs some work still. But it also wonderfully unlocks cheaper, modest guitar and modding to a whole new level, because you can take cheap stuff and put it together and set it up and go, this is a fantastic instrument, and you can do that yourself and save loads of money. So, I mean, I know some of those tools are expensive, but it's an investment, mate. It's worth it. It's
definitely an investment. And actually, I think they're worth every penny. But that is a rabbit hole I've also gone down this week. I've been looking on like Facebook Marketplace and you sent me some stuff on like Cash Converters. And I'm like, there's so many bargains out there.
Cheap guitars.
Kind of looking at it and thinking you could get way more for that guitar if you just kind of advertised it better photos. If people are selling guitars and you clearly don't know anything about guitars and you kind of think, I could go and buy that for, you know, like 75 quid and I could set it up and polish it up and put a better advert out there and sell it on for, you know, 100 quid. And I'm starting to go down this rabbit hole now of, but do you know what I'm worried about with that? I'm worried about buying something thinking, if I buy that, I can probably make 50 quid on it, and then buying it and setting it up and being like, I don't want to sell this.
Well, that's something you have to have the discipline.
You have to be disciplined for sure. But
but it is difficult. Right, it's at least two, maybe three guitars behind me that were bought as project guitars to kind of have a bit of fun with, and then flip and move on. And yet they've stayed on the wall because the other part of the equation is that cheaper guitars are getting really good now. So you buy these cheap things and then you go, oh, it doesn't need as much modding. But I think the kind of Frankenstein thing comes into the fore here now when you can put together and set up guitars because you can just get bits and build it. Like pick up a nice neck here and there, pick up a body here and there. There's so much out there of project guitars that people have just like never finished. And provided you're willing to put the time in and a little bit of money, it can be really rewarding. Your text reminded me when you, because we did go down a rabbit hole this week of sending each other lots of stuff from like pawn shops and eBay and stuff, like tempting, almost daring and tempting each other into buying some of this stuff and doing it up and flipping it. Not necessarily just for the profit, but also for the accomplishment of taking something that was beat up and giving it new life, right? But there's a couple of car shows that I watch in that vein on Netflix. I think one's called Rust to Riches or something, where they literally do that. They start with like a complete like, you know, shell of a vehicle, and then do it
kind of like a barn find kind of thing.
Right, exactly. You know, exactly. Do it up, customize it, flip it. And the whole goal is throughout the series, they then end and finish the series with like a seriously expensive collector's car because they've just flipped and flipped and flipped. And it's quite cool to watch that. But their discipline is they can't get, you know, passionate about these vehicles insofar as wanting to keep them for themselves and, you know, hold on to them. You've got to go, no, this is getting us to the next one, to the next one, to the next one. So, yeah.
It's just tempting, though, isn't it? Because there's part of me in my mind that kind of goes, if I just kind of budget 100 quid for something that I know, if I drop on the right thing that I know I could almost kind of like, you know, double my money on or get half back, then I might have budget for £200 guitar that I can make a little bit of money on or something like that. And then I might have a budget for a £300 guitar that I can then kind of earn a little bit of money on. And then who knows where it might be. I might be, you know, buying a Gibson Les Paul, unlikely, but still, you know, my point is
why not?
Well, you know, I don't think they make them properly anymore, but still, apparently. But anyway, the point is there's kind of like this, there's this temptation to see where it can go. And that's what I think I'm going to try doing that at some point.
Yeah, definitely give it a go. Start off cheap and see where it can go. I mean, the only other thing that's slightly just to temper it is like we've commented on this before, the prices being commanded in the secondhand guitar market at the moment are just silly, really, for some stuff. There's a guitar that I did up and modded and did some bodywork repairs to and set the whole thing up beautifully, got it playing really nicely, decent guitar. And I sold it for like what it was worth at the time. It brand new, you know, 15, 20 years ago, it probably retailed for about £300-350. I got it in a terrible state. It had literally been sat in somebody's attic for I don't know, best part of a decade or whatever, and was just literally just corroded and wrecked, and it had a lot of play wear and stuff. So I put some work into it, got it all lovely and playing beautifully, fully giggable guitar. Looked great. All of the damage had been repaired on it as well, and I think I sold it then for like £150-200 maximum.
I
saw that guitar come up again on one of my feeds, and because I worked on that guitar and did so much work, even though it's a standard production model, I know where I did repairs on it and things, and you couldn't tell unless you did those repairs and looked at them, and it is the guitar I worked on. So 5 years later it's reappeared on eBay or something, and somebody wants £500 for it.
Seriously?
I'm like, it didn't retail for that brand new when it came out. And then, you know, either you or somebody like two or three owners before you bought that off me, done up and set up beautifully. It just amuses me. So now that guitar has gone from being like a complete junker to being playable to now being a vintage collector's piece now all of a sudden, and it's worth more than what it retailed for originally.
Cost of living crisis, eh? Can't even get cheap guitars to stay cheap. It's ridiculous. What's happening? I'll tell you what I did see as well this week, as I was looking at, I did my usual thing of let's find actual vintage guitars that are cheaper than fake vintage guitars from the Murphy Lab.
You tempt me with this game. Every few months, would you rather do this. I get these little texts.
This fake vintage guitar or this actual vintage guitar for the same money. Sorry to interrupt this conversation. However, if you're a regular listener, then you should definitely come and join us on our Facebook group, The Guitar Geek Hangout. Go and join The Guitar Geek Hangout on Facebook now before you carry on with this podcast. I'll wait for you here. Hey, welcome back.
I love the way it comes through, though, in the text flow, because the phone will go off. I'll get this little WhatsApp thing and it'll go, would you rather? And I go, okay, brilliant. Here we go. I'll pay attention. So then the first thing I'll get is something from Murphy Lab or Gibson Custom Shop appear. Yeah. Would you have this?
Yeah.
Newly made, inverted commas, newly made. I don't know if that word applies because it's all historic and Murphy Lab and whatever, but it's just been made.
Yeah.
Or would you rather have this? And then you find on the internet, the equivalent guitar, but from the actual period that it's supposed to be replicating. So you'll find like a 59 Murphy Lab kind of reproduction, because that's what it is.
Yeah.
And then you'll find me like a real, well, not 59. Not 59. 59's come on, stupid price, but something from the 50s and 60s. And then you go, would you rather have actually this real one? Mm. And they're not going for much more money.
No. Well, there are caveats to that. So obviously if you read the spec on the actual vintage guitars, often it's from one of the slightly less kind of desirable years. So sometimes I might send you it'd be like a 64th 355 Murphy Lab that's going for $6,500. And the alternative I've sent you might be like a late 60s or it might be like a 62 or something, or 65. Yeah. It's just not quite that kind of pinpoint year, you know, because Clapton played a Cherry Red 64.
Yeah.
There's this peak in prices on 64 Cherry Red 335s, right? So if you go either side of that, you know, often you'll make a saving. But often if you read the bump as well, some of these vintage guitars might have had a slight refinish in certain areas, or they might not have like original tuners. So it's kind of, if you want to get into the vintage guitar thing for the same money as a Murphy Lab, there are some compromises to make. If you're going like for like, Murphy Lab's pretty much always going to be slightly cheaper, but it's still not the real thing. But if you're buying, if you want a 59 Les Paul, there's no better way to get into that than Murphy Lab, because those things are, those things are amazing. And here's the crazy thing about prices of actual 55 for 59 Les Pauls. I went on Rare and Vintage Guitars the other day and they had a circulated 59 Les Paul, something that's been bought and sold on the market quite a lot, that's a guitar people are aware of. And I think it was being advertised at just under £250,000, £230,000. Yeah. And then more recently I had a look and they had another 59 Les Paul, similar condition, all the bump, all the stuff from, you know, way back when, the original case and everything. But it was uncirculated, it's not been through the market. It's not been through collectors. No. It's a single owner. Somebody bought it.
One previous owner.
Exactly. That guy's owned it.
Full service history. Yeah.
Exactly that. He's owned it, full service history, taken care of it, and then passed away, and the family's inherited it and gone to get it appraised. And because of that alone, it was £430,000. Imagine that. Imagine just because it's never been bought and sold before, it's that much extra. I mean, it's mind-boggling, really. But they are amazing guitars, aren't they? I mean, every time I see someone online showing off some actual real, Gibson Burst, you know, you just kind of like, it does. I don't think there is a more beautiful guitar than a Les Paul from that era. I don't think.
I agree. Fully agree. I coveted it as a child. I saved up and bought Gibson Les Pauls in my adult years. Obviously, nothing like original 59 instruments because my pockets aren't that deep. But I, yeah, for me, it still represents the most beautiful looking guitar that I love to play. But here's the thing. So that uncirculated 59 Les Paul, clearly an incredible guitar. I'm sure it is. I don't know. I haven't played it, but let's assume that every 59 Gibson Les Paul is an incredible guitar because that's what legend tells us.
Yeah.
The money that they're asking for that and that the guitar commands is the same as a good size house for a family to live in. And there's a part of me that just feels slightly nauseous about all of that, right? I mean, we are not talking about something that is, what, I don't know, 1,000 years old, steeped in history, and and you know, this thing is less than 100 years old. It's 60, 70 years old. It's it's been made. It's been made within it within the same, you know, generational lifespan of us. How how can it have appreciated to that extent? I mean, I don't want to get into the macroeconomics of it. It's you know, it's supply and demand. You know, they're in short supply. They're coveted. They're arguably really good instruments, and so they command a price. And I'm sure there's plenty of other examples in the instrument industry and beyond of something that has inflated in price that much because people think it is worth that because it's something special to behold. But when we get into that kind of silly numbers, for me, it just becomes a, it becomes a turn off more than something to lust after, not just because I can't afford it, which I clearly can't, but it's, it just seems silly for a guitar when they're, when they're, you know, that's just silly money for anybody to spend on a guitar, even Joe Bonamassa.
Yeah. Well,
who I'm going to pick on later as well, because he's he's been up to stuff that's annoying me as well.
Yeah, but also, well, excellent. Well, let's talk about that in a minute. But I just, I mean, it does kind of, I think it does make, if you're one of the known guys, you know, that, that buys these things, you know, your John Shanks or your Joe Bonamassa or whatever, then it does make sense actually to buy them because a 59 Les Paul is worth a certain amount. A 59 Les Paul owned by Joe Bonamassa is going to be worth more. That's the thing. That's and that's why I think Joe Bonamassa does this. I don't think he really cares really about how many guitars he's got. I think it's a hobby to him. And I think he knows that if he drops 10 grand on a late 1960s Fender, you know, Jaguar or whatever it is, he knows he's going to get more money back because he's the one who's selling it the next time.
Yeah. Oh, no, he's a smart cookie and he has a complete passion for this. He has an obsession and he knows his stuff and he's a historian and a curator and a phenomenal guitar player. And do you know what? He's earned it and he's grafted really hard. And so why not? So I'm unfairly picking on him, but it, but it is silly money to think that people spend this much on wooden strings.
It is, isn't it? But anyway,
we digress, but I will get back to him.
Let's get back to him just a little bit later on. But first of all, let's get on with our main topic this week. So this week we had a news episode the other week, which was a little bit of a pre-NAMM nugget dropping kind of what we're excited about. This is us kind of taking our favorite things that have dropped now that NAMM has passed and the news has been released and there's some interesting things come out. And we're going to talk about our favourite things from now. I don't know whether this is going to end up being like a top 10 or whatever, but let's see. Let's see how we get on. I don't mind. Do you mind if I start?
Not at all. Please do, mate. Okay, what have you seen from? Because it finished just a few days ago, didn't it? The NAMM show, it's always a kind of interesting point in the calendar year. I mean, I've not been. I don't travel abroad for guitar shows. I visit all the ones in the UK, but it's always the place where people want to release new stuff and get some good PR around their new gear. And so I always kind of watch what's coming out because it sets the trend for the year ahead. And gives me something to get excited about. So what have you seen? What have you seen?
Right, do you know how I'm always like bemoaning that there's not enough innovation sometimes in the guitar industry, you know? Think sometimes, you know, we tend to, guitarists tend to stick to their gun, you know, I wonder if this pickup sounds like something that was wound by you know, some, you know, lady in the 60s who used to wind pickups after lunch and to get them really sounding good. But anyway, you know, I like new things too. I really, really love new innovations, honestly. And I think one of my favorite that I've seen is that Seymour Duncan have come out with something called the Hyper Switch. I don't know if you've seen this.
It's the top of my list as well, mate.
Oh, is it really?
I think this is... No, you carry on. Carry on. It's the thing I'm... No, please don't apologise. I mean, again, we haven't collaborated in advance on what things have excited us the most. We've just gone off and done our separate reading to come back and discuss. So I'm delighted we're starting here. Go on. You carry on, man. Carry
on. And then this is like... This is exactly the kind of thing I love. Not that, you know, that I'm not a technology... fiend or anything like that. You know, my day job, I work in technology and, you know, and designing things. And, I am kind of interested in it, but I like simple ideas that are well innovated and that help to, I think, increase the experience for people that they can get out of life. Right. So this is exactly that kind of thing. So it's a simple idea as well. You know, it's a Bluetooth. Connectable five-way selector switch for like your Strat, you know, or whatever.
Yeah.
And you're probably listening thinking, what? What the heck are you on about? So basically...
It's a five-way selector switch. Exactly, he's getting that excited about that a five-way selector switch.
You're going to play your Spotify through your phone. No, it's not that. It's you download an app and what it allows you to do, you basically just, you'd put this switch into your guitar, you wire the pickups up, how it shows you to wire them up to... You know, some captive screw connections. And then obviously I think you have to fit a battery to make it active, but
you do.
But then what it does, it allows you to connect to it with an app, and then you can use the app to decide how that switch works with your pickups. So if you want position one to be your bridge and your neck, you can. If you want position two to be like a coil split humbucker, you can't, you can do anything you like, and you can configure remotely through an app how that switch works. And I just love that idea so much of being able to go, do you know what? I've got this Strat and I want it to work for this gig next week. I want it to work like a normal Strat. I'm just going to upload that configuration and it's a normal Strat. And then you go for the next week, I've got a bit of a country gig. So I want a bit more of a telly sound. So I'm going to change my pickup configuration on the switch in the app to be, you know, so I can get the front and the neck and the bridge pickup together. There's such an amazing... but simple use of available technology. I love it. It's just my favorite thing, I think, that's come out of NAMM is the Seymour Duncan Hyper Switch. And I don't know, what do you think of it? Because you said it's at the top of your list as well.
It is. I think they're onto a winner here. I think it's going to be interesting to see how this plays out in terms of practicality, right? So it's new and newsworthy for sure. But I've not had the chance to get my hands on one or install one yet and test out and in real life. But on face value, what do I love about this? A few things, right? It's difficult, as you say, to bring innovation to guitars. And we've talked about this on the show before with things like the robot tuners on the Gibson headstock. Guitarists get very like wedded to keeping things traditional with the instrument itself. We're quite happy in general as a generalization to kind of use modeling technology and play with amps and pedals and multi-effects and stuff. But the guitar, we generally want it to feel fairly traditional. And that kind of bears out in the way in which, you know, guitars are selling, the models that are selling, the ones that are popular, et cetera. They're pretty traditional stuff still. So it'll be interesting to see if this, because it doesn't fundamentally change the aesthetic of the guitar, because what you can't see the innovation itself, right? You can only hear it. So once you've installed this, it'll be hidden away in the body of the guitar. So it'd be interesting to see if people go, well, that's cool. I can live with that. It doesn't change the aesthetic of my guitar. Mm-hmm. It's a mod and a relatively easy mod, I think, to any S style, T style type guitar, right? You're basically replacing the five-way selector switch. You might need a bit of a soldering iron potentially to desolder some of the ground wires off the back of the pot, or you could even, if you want to be messy, just snip them off. But the actual installation into the five-way switch itself, provided you follow the wiring diagram, it's screwdriver,
that's
right?
It,
so
yeah.
should be pretty solderless installation to some extent. You do have to figure out where you're going to put a 9-volt battery to keep it live, and that might be one of the kind of pain points. Hopefully you'll be able to find a friendly tech luthier, or you have a guitar that has a battery box already there, so you can run off of that, or you're going to have to put the 9-volt battery underneath the scratch plate, maybe in the tone control cavity, and kind of keep it in there, which will make it a bit of a change depending on how long that battery lasts. You're going to have to keep taking the scratch plate off to change it, but I mean, should probably coincide with string changes and things. So I think there is some practicalities to consider with doing this.
For sure.
But I think if it works in the way it's supposed to, this is really cool in terms of tonal options, right? Because if you've got like a HSS configurated guitar, or even like take that guitar and put like stacked pickups in the single coil position, like put two single coils but stacked humbuckers, and then put a humbucker in the bridge of like a super strat. Then the tonal possibilities you've got at your hands by installing this 5-way selector switcher are really diverse, right? Because you'll be able to have so many different combinations of pickups, all selectable via an app straight to your guitar, and then saved under one of those 5-way presets. But you can also do out of phase and kind of different parallel series wiring configurations as well. So it's not just about different combinations of passive pickups. It's also about, you know, getting out of phase sounds as well in there. That's right. I think it's really cool. And they've priced it reasonably. It's £150, $150.
Yeah, I think that's really reasonable.
Which is pretty reasonable. So I think in terms of a nice, should be relatively easy to install mod onto a guitar, I think they've priced it really, really well. Seymour Duncan, obviously a huge brand. There is obviously the slight consideration around this is app based and Bluetooth based, and technology moves so quickly, it is difficult to imagine anything happening to Seymour Duncan or them failing to support this app for many, many, many years to come. And Bluetooth being a redundant kind of interface, it's very difficult to imagine that. But, you know, within our lifetime, technology has moved so quickly. So inevitably there will come a point where, you know, Bluetooth gets superseded by something else, or this app fails to be supported. Yeah. But so it's, you kind of got to ride out that risk and just assume it's going to be supported for a good few years to come. Yeah. But I'm intrigued. I definitely want to fit one this year.
Well, I think the key for me is that, like, Seymour Duncan have stepped out over that line, haven't they? Made that first iteration of this, and hopefully the marketplace responds. That's always a great thing about this kind of technology.
Yeah, absolutely. At that price point, it's definitely something that I'm happy to take a punt on and purchase one and fit into one of my guitars and give it a go. It's not going to break the bank. It sounds really cool. It's backed by Seymour and Duncan, Seymour and Duncan? I just split one man into two. Sorry, Seymour. Seymour and Duncan.
Seymour Duncan.
just Seymour. Yeah. Seymour and Duncan. I think it sounds really cool, man.
Me too.
I think it's worth a shot. So,
well, let's leave that there. I mean, I could talk about that about this for the whole thing. The whole podcast. But let's move on. So
let's move on.
That was your top of the list as well. What's next on yours?
Well, the next thing on my list, and this is in no particular order, although the Hyperswitch was at the top in terms of things I definitely wanted to make sure we talked about. And then the rest of the things on my list are some observations and kind of comments. And there is a little bit more gear on my list.
Yeah.
So the next thing that I kind of wanted to comment on is obviously Gibson, Fender and PRS aren't there. Which I think says something. It must be expensive to exhibit at the NAMM show, and there's an expectation on what you release and things. But, I mean, it isn't the first year Gibson haven't been there. Interesting that Fender and PRS were relatively absent from the show. So I think that kind of says something about what NAMM is becoming. And maybe those big companies, you know, they sell the most guitars, they sell the most gear, they just feel they don't need to spend their money exhibiting there. Which, you know, makes me question what the show is about. Is it about supporting musicians and connecting with them and forming partnerships and a relationship with your end user? Or is it just there as a PR exercise to flog gear? And maybe they've said, well, we don't need to spend our money doing that. People buy our stuff regardless. So that was one observation. The other observation is lots of signature models coming out, particularly from Ibanez. People like Martin Miller, who we love, Steve Vai, obviously Satriani, Larry Basilio, who we've mentioned recently in one of the shows, all getting new Ibanez signature guitars, beautiful guitars. I love what Ibanez keep doing to support artists and bringing out a range of instruments in different price points that appeal to different players. I think that's very cool of Ibanez to keep doing that. I've set up a number of gems in the past, Steve Vai Ibanez gems. Every time I set one up, I go, these are just bloody marvelous instruments. I'm not a huge Vai fan. No, that's I shouldn't say that. He's an incredible player, and I love watching his interviews and the way he articulates things about the guitar and how he plays guitar. He's not for me somebody that I aspire to play like. That's what I mean.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah,
but I have huge respect and reverence for the man as a musician. But he's not one of my kind of like, oh, I wish I could play like him, because his playing is of a certain style. But so that's why I've never bought a gem. But every time I play one and set one up, I'm kind of like, these are wicked instruments. They just they really are. They just are such great instruments. And this latest one that they've brought out at NAMM, it's so over the top. It's like this multicolored, I would say monstrosity, but it's not. It's beautiful. I love it. It's so over the top, and it glows in the dark, and it's just, I love it. I just thought it was. It's like how I feel about Las Vegas. It's just like it should be everything I want to hate in life, but because it is so over the top and outrageous, I just love it and have an amazing time every time I go there. That's kind of how I feel about the Steve Vai, and particularly this latest gem. It's just so obnoxious.
Well,
I've
got to correct you on something slightly. Sorry, just
please.
It's not a gem, it's a pier, isn't it? It's the pier.
Oh, yes.
It does have the gem and the pier.
Yes, he does. He does. You're right.
It's a fancy one.
It's a more fancy version of it, yes.
I think there is a gem, you're right, but also that multicolored dip paint one that's glowing in the dark, that's a pier model. But that's basically a gem, and it's just meant to be a bit more kind of ornate, I think.
Quite right.
Yeah. So there you go.
You've seen that one, though, the one that glows in the dark.
You sent me a video of it. I was watching it. The guy went into the booth, didn't he, with the UV light, and he basically brought it to life. And I was just like, it just looks so beautiful.
Because it does.
All the colour on it there is just absolutely amazing. I mean, I can just imagine him on stage playing that guitar.
Yeah.
You know, playing like Weeping China Doll or something, or something, and just like, it's just a perfect Steve Vai guitar. It just shouts out Steve Vai. And I'm the same. I'm not a huge Steve Vai fan, but I'm exactly the same. I just incredible reverence for what he's done as a guitarist, not just as a solo artist, but with, you know, Dave Lee Roth and Frank Zappa and those guys. You know, and so such cool guitars. I love Ibanez as a company. They just knock it out of the park every year.
Great instruments. Great instruments. But the other thing that I was observing is that also from the presence at NAMM and the news wires and press release and stuff you read, I mean, it's purely indicative of the times that we live in. And I'm not saying about what I'm about to say is a criticism. It's merely an observation. But obviously, the social media influencers who we watch on YouTube, you know, I love watching as well, commanded a lot of presence, and you saw a lot of partnerships from those guys with some of the big manufacturers. So there's this interesting kind of dynamic and juxtaposition now between the traditional type stadium guitar heroes that certainly like the likes of you and I grew up admiring, and now the social media influencer type guitarist. So, you know, people like Matthias Asato, new signature model from him, outwards from Sir at NAMM. You've got Ravia Massad, who's now doing big partnerships with Ernie Ball. You've got, obviously, Chapman Guitars, you know, releasing stuff and doing partnerships with, you know, Danish Pete and things. All these people graft really hard and produce amazing content and are phenomenal players. So, again, no criticism, but just interesting observation to see the reflection of the times where, you know, you're starting to see real, backing and big sponsorship being very visible now with social media influencer guitar players, as opposed to your more traditional guitar heroes that you know, set out stadiums and stuff.
You could take a cynical outlook on that, couldn't you, and say
you could,
but I think kind of like good for them, good for that generation of guitarists, and good for that generation of kids who are coming up aspiring to be like those. That's our guitar heroes when we were 13 and 14 year olds. That's these guys are the today's 13 and 14 year old guitar heroes.
You know, absolutely.
So good for them.
And it keeps guitar relevant, and it keeps people engaged in guitar, as you say, and it's accessible for a younger generation of players. I mean, God knows, with the price of concert tickets and gig tickets as they are these days, I mean, people probably can't afford to go and see, you know, bands like we used to when we were young, when concert tickets were, you know, 30, 40, 50 pounds a go. Now you've got to find 200, 300 pounds to go and see, you know, somebody play live. It's crazy. So, you know, this is how people consume music and guitars in this day and age. So if it keeps guitar as a kind of passion and hobby and, you know, career, alive, and for a new generation coming through, then absolutely, you know, let's give these influencers that platform and keep it going, because you know, you've got to move with the times. But yeah, just interesting observation there. I have more, but what else? What else?
Well, I'm gonna jump on your mention of Rabir Massad going to Ernie Ball.
Okay,
as a loose segue into some more Ernie Ball news, which is a fan and friend of the show, Steve Lukather. He's the L4 model of his signature guitar range is out now, which is Ernie Ball is saying is the culmination of over 30 years of collaboration. So it's 30 years, pretty much early 90s when the first Luke came out, the Music Man Luke, and now we're at the Luke 4. And and I think there's some interesting additions here, because one of the things that the Luke has always been, I think pretty much, it's always been either a HSS or a HH. So it's always been either dual humbucker, or it's always been humbucker and single coil. Whereas now you've got the choice of three single coils or dual humbuckers. And there's also a limited edition model launched as part of the release of this latest range of guitars, which is HSS. But that also comes with, for the first time, a Floyd Rose, because he's always been, you know, 2-point vibrato system rather than a Floyd Rose. So, being such a massive Steve Lukather fan, I loved this news, because I would love to own and play a Luke. Anyone who owns and plays a Luke is a person who I'm very jealous of, you know. So, Damien Lodrick, if you're listening, very jealous. But anyway, they just look like fantastic guitars. And one of the things I love about Music Man as well is the kind of, they seem to have a really brave approach to finishing guitars. You know what I mean? It's like this new range of guitars have got finishes that the Luke models haven't had before, which is kind of like, you know, Luke fans might be like, well, I liked that colour from the previous range, you know. And I just, like, you know, Music Man is just like, well, tough, you know, you've got these colours now. And I like that. And but in terms of the guitar itself, some interesting things other than those, you know, pickup appointments, the pickup technology has changed again. So one of the things that Lukather had, he had the ODMGs, and then he moved on to Damasios, and now these have changed again to Music Man's own latest heat-treated pickups, apparently. I don't know what that means. I don't know much about the technology, but apparently
it
sounds fantastic. Something to look up. But yeah, I was excited by that. I'd like to try one of those out at some point. Never played a Luke.
I really want you to own one of those in your lifetime.
I'd love to own one too. Maybe one day.
Let's begin your guitar flipping with pawn shop guitars.
If I start with £100 guitars, see if I can go and earn £4,000.
How long will it take Matthew Oliver to flip his way from a Squire Strat to a new Luke with Floyd Rose?
Yeah, well, I can tell you what it would be. If I managed to go all the way up to enough to buy a Luke, do you know what I'd end up buying?
Go on.
Probably a new kitchen.
I was going to say some new windows.
That's it. New kitchen worktops or something. Anyway.
Yeah. No, you've got to see. That's why you've got to separate that stuff into a different fund. Like, it doesn't exist. It's not for that. It is. And there's always something else to justify that is a less. Well, you know, you got to make space in your life for less practical purchases.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, my friend. Anyway, well, let's stick on the pickup kind of theme. Did you mention there heat treated pickups? Which somebody write in and tell me. Big Ray, shout out. Tell me what they're talking about. With heat treated pickups. I don't know. Maybe it does something to the magnet or whatever. Who knows?
Is it like milk? Is it like? Does it stop it going off? Does it stop the pickups going off?
Oh, I see.
UHT pickups.
ultra heat treated. Yeah.
Stops the half and going half pickups. Past your eyes. No.
I have no idea what it means. I have no idea. Doesn't that melt the wax? Who knows? Who knows?
But yeah. Please tell us, someone.
So, pickups. Seymour and Duncan. Again, they're getting a lot of plugging.
Did you just say type... Seymour and Duncan again?
Oh, man, I've done it again.
Come on.
What is wrong with me today?
Unbelievable. You're making it sound like some kind of local grocery store. Farrow and Ball, Seymour and Duncan, Fortnum and Masons.
Oh, it's killing me. Anyway. I'm killing myself. I've never done that in my entire life.
What's
I fit and buy these pickups. Ball, yeah. Seymour Duncan.
Seymour and Duncan.
Oh,
come on.
Jesus, Seymour why am I
Duncan,
doing it?
Comedy pickups.
Yeah. There used to be a very cheesy pop band in the UK called PJ and Duncan. Maybe that's I don't know where I've gone with this.
That's what it is. Anyway, so right. This is going in the intro.
Please God. Right, so Seymour, Duncan, one yes. company, one man who makes great pickups. and the great Joe Bonamassa. Have teamed up for a collaboration on a pickup set. I don't think it's the first time they've teamed up to collaborate on a pickup set. And indeed, Seymour Duncan does many collaborations with people on pickups, being the obliging chap that he is, always looking to help artists recreate their favorite pickups that they find in guitars and help them have them in all of their instruments, and indeed bring them to the public for them to have in their instruments as well. So, you know, total kudos for that. I have Seymour Duncan pickups loaded in my guitars. I have signature Seymour Duncan pickups loaded in some of my guitars because of this very notion of taking an artist's pickup and reproducing it for the masses. So all in favor of that.
Is it the Slash ones you've had? Is it?
It is. Yeah. Yeah. It is. So now that Joe and Seymour have teamed up to bring us the Cradle Rock pickup, cool name, named after one of Joe's favorite Strats, Joe's favorite 63 Fender Strat, as we know, a very well-regarded year, to your earlier point about certain years commanding certain kudos. The 63 Strat is one of those. But it was the little video PR piece that was released alongside this that just made me first chuckle and then go into a fit of rage and then just think, okay, this is crazy, right? And I shared some of this with you on the day that this came out. So I mean, on the face of it, nothing wrong with this concept, right? Joe Bonamassa, huge influence, huge icon, phenomenal guitar player and collector. He has a favorite 63 Strat. He's asked Seymour Duncan to clone the pickups on because he thinks there's something special about them. Cool. That sounds immediately appealing to me. Love that. These pickups retail, though, now for $400 a set, and they're limited edition to only 1,000 sets. Mm. So obviously, you've got all of the principles there of high cost, low availability, which means that these are now going to be fought after. in any case. Mm. If it wasn't enough that it was a Joe Bonamassa favorite 63 and Seymour Duncan producing these limited Strat pickups to make it kind of have that, you know, aura of specialness around it. Yeah. They then go on in the video to describe the fact that, well, you do know that the 63 Strat that Joe's playing, this is the same year as Stevie Ray Vaughan's number one Strat came out. And Stevie Ray's number one was the 63 Strat. And there's something mythical about that year and Strats and those Strat pickups. And Joe's saying it, and Joe's never wrong. And well, you know, if you weren't convinced enough by that, Stevie Ray Vaughan should be enough to convince you. And then obviously Joe's dialed in a very lovely Stevie Ray Vaughan-esque tone on his Dumble that we all have kicking around. And then proceeds to play very Stevie Ray Vaughan-esque licks, which makes a nice change from constant Eric Johnson noodling.
That's true.
And so therefore, by the end of this 30-second video sting, you're left literally, as I was, going, well, I need these pickups in my life, don't I, now? Because I like Joe Bonamassa. I want my Strat to sound like a 63 Strat. And now Joe's told me that Stevie Ray's number one was a 63. So look, that's two of them telling me that these pickups I have to buy if I'm going to get anywhere near any kind of tonal satisfaction. And the only thing that they can tell me is that there's something powerful and mystic about these pickups that they can't figure it out. But I tell you what, Seymour figured it out, and he's bagged these up for you for $400. Get them now, kids. You're just rolling your eyes at everything I'm saying.
I'm going to drop out of my head and run across the table.
Something
mystical and magical about them. No, there's not. It's just EQ. All that happened. It's just everything is EQ. You could save money, buy yourself a decent EQ pedal and EQ your sound until it sounds like something like that. Or you could, like, well, I mean, I'm sure you know, right? You can just actually go and buy some, like, you know, Texas Specials or something instead and sound like Stevie Ray Vaughan.
Well, exactly. So this is the thing, right? It's slightly misleading because there were parts of Stevie Ray's number one that was a 63, but that guitar was a little bit of a Frankenstein in itself, right? And actually, the pickups on Stevie Ray's number one are well documented to be a set of 59 pickups, right? So that's a little bit misleading in the first place. The Fender Custom Shop have already cloned the 59 pickups from Stevie's Strat and do a couple of different options for you. So you can get the 59 Custom Shop pickups with the same magnets and near enough same specs as these Cradle Rocks. And they've also got the Texas Specials, which are an even more faithful reproduction of those 59 pickups. And you can get those for like $180 a set. So already less than half price. So it's been done before, right? With actually a more accurate representation of the year that was in Stevie Ray Vaughan's Strat. But they're not calling them Stevie Ray Vaughan pickups anyway. So they're calling them the Cradle Rock from Joe's 63. Maybe I would have been less pissed off if they'd just left it there. It's like they had to drop the Stevie Ray thing in there just to give it extra beef, which they didn't need to.
But then they've called it the Cradle Rock, which is a little bit too close to Van Halen, like, you know, the Cradle will rock. If you say, hey, I've got these pickups called the Cradle Rock pickups, I immediately think, oh, are they like rock pickups, you know, like humbuckers, you know? That seems strange. I think it's a bit, again, cork sniffery alert for me.
Snake oil, as I call it. Absolute snake oil bullshit. Well, the other thing is, dear listeners, before you go and spend $400 on a pair of Seymour Duncan Cradle Rock Joe Bonamassa 63, aka 59 Stevie Ray Vaughan number one pickups, before you do that, take your good selves over to the folk at Iron Gear, who do not sponsor this show, but probably need to, based on the amount that I buy from them, fit in customers' guitars and endorse them on this show. But only because I think they're really decent pickups. Take yourselves over to Iron Gear Pickups, who have already cloned the Texas Special set and do a set called the Texas Loco. And you can have these delivered, particularly if you're in the UK, for 79 good British pounds.
Is that per pickup or per set?
No, that's per set, per Matthew set. Oliver.
So that's a set of three pickups delivered.
That's a set of three pickups that have the same Alnico magnet, the same output specifications, same wire, same gauge wire as these fabled Cradle Rock pickups. So by all means, spend $400 or spend £79 for the entire set and spend the rest on your new kitchen or taking your family out for some food or buying another guitar.
Or buy the Seymour Duncan... the Seymour and Duncan Bluetooth switch for your guitar so that you can...
Well, yeah, there's a good point. Yeah, not to diss Seymour Duncan. It's like, save the money and go and buy one of his fabulous-looking hyper switches instead.
That's it.
And, and stop bringing Stevie Ray Vaughan into every bloody thing, everybody. He was amazing, good Lord.
But I'm sure he barely cared about these things. I mean, I'm sure Fender barely cared about... it's just something else I've been thinking about this week. It's very clear and obvious to me that Leo Fender designed these instruments so that they could be accessible, profitable, and very easy to build without, so that they could be, you can have somebody making necks, somebody making bodies, all this production line stuff, and they just bolt together. And I'm sure he never stood up in front of the production hall at the beginning of 1963 and said, "Hey, let's just make the pickups a little bit magical this year, please, but stop in December." I'm sure that's nonsense. It's just there's variation in magnet, The reason these things are different from year to year is because they use whatever they could get hold of. There's no magnet manufacturer going, "We need to make magnets for pickups." It's like valve. The reason guitar amps were made with valves is because they had to use technology that was available at the time. There was nothing specific to that industry being made. You had to use, but anyway, sorry, pontificating again. Sometimes I get carried away. I'm just going to stop that.
Mate, I laid your soapbox out for you. I put one foot on it myself, and it's a pleasure to see you join me in the grumpy old man. But in all seriousness, though, I mean, look, do what you want, dear audience. Like, God knows the amount of money I've spent on stuff that doesn't really practically make sense, but I've bought into some marketing hype around it because we're all human beings. It's all cool. No judgment here, but what is nice is that we can offer people alternatives if they wish to try and get that sound, because there's a lot to be said for using your ears, dialing in with your EQ, and actually looking at the specs of what you're buying. And to be honest, I think you'd be hard pressed to tell the difference between a £79 set of Texas Locos in a good guitar with a good amp set up properly versus the Cradle Rock ones. But hey, who knows? Who knows? Maybe someone will do that YouTube video. That was it. I had one more bit of gear that I wanted to mention as well that I think looks really cool. And I really fancy trying one of these out. And that is a pedal from JHS, which is the Lizard Queen Octave Fuzz. Which will surprise you, right? Because I'm not really a huge fan, a user of Octave and or Fuzz. So why would I be excited by this pedal?
I don't know why I found that funny, Octave and all Fuzz.
I'm excited. I'm excited by a pedal that has both of them in, which is bizarre.
That is unlikely.
Well, it goes back to this point about using your ears. So as I was looking through all of the stuff that came out of NAMM and watching the videos and listening to the sound clips and video clips, this one took me by surprise because I was thinking, well, I'm not a huge Octave user and I'm not a huge Fuzz user. But of course, a lot of the musicians that I love are and do use this. You know, the likes of, I mean, the list is endless, right? But instantly, whilst listening to these videos of this pedal, you can hear the Jimmy kind of sound, the Philips Ace sound at higher gain settings, the kind of slash sound where he does use kind of some sort of Fuzz and Octave Fuzz tones, some kind of Santana style vibes. Just watching the video clips of this pedal, and I know it's marketing stuff again, and I know I'm going to sound massively hypocritical, but the sounds that were coming from this video were genuinely usable, cool yeah. sounds that I thought, ah, actually, yeah, I can hear the fuzz element and I can hear the octave element and the interplay between the two of them. And you can dial up each of those independently to create the perfect blend that you want of those two effects. But it's really usable, lovely rock sounds and blues rock sounds. And I just thought, you know what, that doesn't exist on my pedal board at the moment. And I could see myself using a number of those tones for some of the cover songs that we do, just to add a different dimension of tone. And they've badged all this up in a really lovely kind of chassis and artwork, and it retails for $99. Which I think is a really sensible price for a very versatile pedal that could actually sit on somebody's pedal board and give them a new dynamic of sound and effect that they don't currently have if your pedal board is anything like mine. So I thought that was a nice bit of affordable gear that's come out that looks really cool.
Fantastic.
So yeah, check that out. The Lizard Queen Octave Fuzz.
I'm gonna check that out on YouTube and have a listen, because I do like that sound. And I think notoriously a lot of the pedals that are out there that provide like octave fuzz are quite kind of difficult to balance and get the sound right. There's a lot of tweaking that has to be done for people, and you know, depending on where you play on the guitar, it sounds different.
But yeah,
I think JHS are probably, I think they're probably the best at that. They make popular tones more accessible through their pedals, don't they? You know, like with the, you know, they're not ashamed to say this is based on a Blues Breaker, or this is based on a Tube Screamer, or this is based on this or that. But what they do is make those pedals probably slightly more tweakable. You can get to the good tones quicker. You know, they've made them almost more usable. I think they're really good at that. Awesome, man.
Yeah, I should say it's Electro Harmonix and JHS.
That's cool.
Which is cool. That's it's cool, an interesting kind of... Yeah, it really is. I'm just looking at the moment. Yeah, £99 you can get it on Guitar at the moment.
Amazing.
So yeah, it's already available to buy. But yeah, have a look. See, tell me later what you think of this pedal.
Yeah,
but
for sure,
I just think I think it's got some really cool usable tones, and I like that whole kind of Philip Sace type vibe tone, and I can see it being quite easy to dial in on this pedal.
Yeah.
Nice simple layout, three knobs, cool graphic, really affordable price. Yeah, it looks cool. I'm going to check one of those out. I like the look of that.
Well, my last one to add to the list is I think they released this just before, or at least released the news just before now. But it's the Positive Grid Spark Go. So you've obviously got the
little one.
Yeah, so you've got the Spark, haven't you? The big one that came out a few years ago, most popular amp of all time already. Sold so many, outsold every amp ever. Yeah. So, and that was like the desktop 40-watt. Practice amp that you could plug into, but it also had an app and all kinds of things. And then last year or the year before, they brought out the mini, which is like, that's like a half sized version of the one you've got, or a third size, like a little box. And this year, what they brought out is the Go, which is basically about the size of your iPhone, maybe even smaller, thicker than that. It's basically like a tiny mini practice amp. You plug your guitar into. It's got a volume control. I think you can plug headphones into it, but it's basically you could put it in your pocket, but it's still a little 5-watt practice amp, and you connect to it with an app. But what I like about this is this pattern of going from an amp this big to an amp this big, and now they've done that. And I'm like, what's next year? Is it going to be like little ear pods that you wirelessly connect your guitar to? And then what next? Is it going to be like a chip you put in your head so you can always hear your guitar? It's just this miniaturization of it, but get still keep
so
the
funny,
quality.
Isn't it?
And I've got Positive Grid Bias FX as a plugin on my computer. It's one of the sounds. It's one of the ways I get sounds when I'm practicing at home if I'm not using the Helix. And the sounds from Positive Grid are awesome. The guitar tones are really, really great. Very quick and easy to program up some decent sounds. And you got lots of access through the apps and through the portals online to download other people's patches. You know, so you can. If you want to go online and search for it, I want to get the Prince Purple Rain chorus sound, you can just download somebody else's patch and have a listen to it, and it sounds great. So I really like Positive Grid, the way they do things, and I like that this Spark Go 5-watt amp. It looks good. I think it's still like £100, even though it's just a little thing, but it looks super well made. Really, really well made.
And who's this going to appeal to? Like home users wanting to practice at home with headphones, but still have access to that kind of Positive Grid Spark interface. That's right. That's the practical use of this.
People who just want a quick and easy way to practice wherever they are. If you're even a pro guitarist, you're on tour and you're in a bus a lot of the time or traveling in hotel rooms, things like that, and you just want something quick and easy to plug a guitar into just to warm up and things like that, that's going to be awesome. I think anyone really who just wants an easier way to practice and listen to guitar, listen to themselves play guitar through with getting a decent sound as well, it's going to benefit any of those people. So, you know, it's great. That's me. Those are the things I like. I'm done. But was there a Joe Bonamassa thing you wanted to talk about? Did you say
it? No, that was it. We did it. That was the Cradle Rock pickups. We did it. I think we pretty much covered that. We annihilated Joe unfairly once more, and his friend Seymour and his friend Duncan. I think we got all three of them.
Yeah, I'll tell you what. There is one other thing I wanted to just have. One other thing I wanted to mention, but it's because I just don't get it. And I guess we'll finish this podcast on with a request. I'd like someone to help me understand something. And that's that one of the big things that seems to have been revealed is the T-Rex pedals come from Denmark.
Oh, yeah.
Do you know about this? They've reproduced the Binson Echo Rec. And they said they spent 8 years developing this to get it right. And I kind of like, but it already existed. Like you're saying, you're recreating. I know you can't buy it anymore. Why is it taking 8 years to develop something that is already exists? Do you know what I mean? I'm struggling to understand. And also, if I want to sound like a Binson Echo Rec, I'm just going to go and use the, you know, plug-in on my
Helix. You know, yeah, that's the thing that I don't understand is like, it's clearly not for me.
No, that's the thing.
I think part of it is the aesthetics and it looks cool and it's got like, they've built it. It's quite a big unit by today's standards of things. I'm sure the original was bigger, but they've used like tape head technology, which is kind of a little bit vintagey in itself to help create that sound and it spins and it moves and it's kind of like, okay, that's cool. But in terms of applicability, wait, when and where are you going to use it? I know they used it on drum effects in the past and all kinds of stuff, right? To me it looks like a studio tool.
It does.
For somebody it's a studio tool, right? For somebody that's got everything else, like what do you buy for somebody that's got a, you know, for Rick Beato in his beautiful studio, he's got everything you could possibly want. What do you get Rick Beato for Christmas? Get him one of these and he'll show people and then he'll ask them if they want to use it on his track that he's producing and they'll go, no, not really. And he'll be really disappointed. I don't know why I've picked on Rick Beato.
I think you're absolutely right in choosing that name. But I think that's the thing. It's just not for me. I think it says more about me. I think I'm sure it's an absolutely wonderful piece of engineering. And I think, you know, there's no reason for them not to be proud of what they've done. But I just struggle to understand.
I don't get it.
I'm like,
I don't get it. No, you and me both, mate.
Only in our industry, only in this industry can you be revered for making something that's already been made before again. You know, it's. Yeah.
In a less practical way than modern technology has already existed. As you said, you could get a plug-in for this if you really wanted that sound or this.
What could you have invented with that 8 years of development time? What innovations have you not brought upon the world because you were deciding to create something that's already been done? You know,
that's just an assassination of somebody's like life's work. I love that.
That's a good point.
Maybe it comes from a place of it's like when you hear about people that have studied a PhD in the properties of self-raising flour and its applicability to making the perfect bagel, and you go, well, that's great,
fantastic.
But the perfect bagel already exists. I can get it down the road. It's really lovely. Did you need to spend 4 years like studying that? But you know, yeah, me too. I don't even know if self-raising flowers and bagels. Let's go get bagels.
Kieran, mate, what a pleasure. It's always a pleasure.
Same. Ditto, mate. Have a great week. I'll report back next week. I'm trying out some new pedals this weekend on the pedal wall, but we'll get into that next week.
Looking forward to it. Have a cracking gig, and I will speak to you on the flip side, mate.
Yes, mate. Take care of yourself.
Take care.
Bye, mate. Bye.
Thanks so much for listening. If you like what you hear, then remember there are 70-odd other episodes going back over 2 years now that you can check out, where we talk about all kinds of things, like how to run a jam night, how to find a band, getting good live sound, and even a Guitar Smarts pub quiz. Go and enjoy them. Anyway, best wishes. See you next time on the Guitar Smarts podcast.